The next session, we're hosting Septon, and we have the pleasure of hosting Junpei, CEO, and Hal Zhu, CFO of the company. Thank you for putting the time to be at the conference. Jenny, what I'm starting off with most of our companies that we're hosting is sort of a recap of the announcements that you've made around CES, given that everyone's, for every company, it's a big show in terms of meeting customers. I did see sort of the launch of Vista X120 Plus that you announced. So maybe just start with walking us through sort of the performance improvements that you're looking at from that product relative to your products in the portfolio right now, and how what's the timeline of that making that product available to customers as well?
Yeah, thanks for having us here. My name is Junpei, CEO of Septon Technologies. As some of you may already know, that we actually develop our LiDAR based on the application specifically for ADAS. This is actually a focus we established well over 6 years ago, and we have charged forward with this focus until we actually captured the very significant design win was the deployment of our LiDAR into the General Motors Ultra Cruise program. So we're actually going to be supplying LiDAR for that. So we're very much focused on the ADAS applications and ADAS industry, kind of a little bit away from the level 4, level 5 vehicles, even though we have some exposure there. So the newly released product, the X120 Plus, is yet another step in this direction. It's aimed very specifically designed for ADAS applications with a smaller form factor. It's specifically much thinner. It actually has just a bit shy of 30 millimeters of height, which makes the integration into vehicles much easier. So certainly higher density, bigger field of view, all of these are yet again indicating our focus and our dedication to the ADAS industry. And this new product is, we have samples now, and it's actually coming out for customers to be tested and, kick the tire, and hopefully we'll get into some real program this or next year.
Just to clarify, so because we've had other LiDAR companies here on the stage today, and when they've talked about their next generation product, they've talked about like maybe cost or bill of materials being a big driver of where their next generation product goes. So when you're thinking about the Vista X120, is it better cost performance, or is it better performance in terms of sort of the metrics that a LiDAR is evaluated on by an OEM in terms of performance, distance, range, et cetera? Like what is sort of the improvement areas that you're looking at?
Yeah. So like you said, the cost is always, I would want to say it's almost number one factor for you to capture a design win. If your LiDAR costs $10,000, $20,000, there's no way you could get to anywhere in a car, in an everyday car. So, and Septon, we became where we are today, the cost is a big factor. So we have already captured the design win with Ultra Cruise at GM. So you can imagine we actually hit the cost target. With the X120 Plus, the number one improvement, I would say, is actually the performance. And that performance is including the form factor, the data rate, and field of view, and some other elements in it at the same cost, or potentially with higher level of integration, it could be even lower cost. So hopefully that answers your question.
Got it. Okay. Now, stepping back here, I think one of the bigger concerns that we're hearing from investors is more in relation to how does the sort of overall macro backdrop impact LiDAR companies, including how does it impact sort of pipeline in the near term. You engage with a lot of OEM customers on a regular basis. What are you hearing from them? Is it slowing down some of their decision-making process, how they're responding to the macro, or how are you seeing that sort of pipeline build going at this point?
Yeah, if you ask that question 3-4 years ago, there are 40, 50 LiDAR companies out there competing for maybe a small handful of program. So over the past year or two, you know, the whole industry landscape has changed somewhat. And this is my personal assessment of how the change become. Is like there are two camps of LiDAR companies. So one camp is the company that already has a design win. The other is they don't. So in this automotive industry, the validation of a certain technology is really important. So I do continue to see that the companies that already have a design win will continue to have design wins, that you prove yourself, you have invested, and you have validated your product. So that's the general thought I had, you know, or observation I have in the marketplace. Specifically to us, certainly the acquisition of the GM Ultra Cruise program propelled us to be at the forefront, to be engaged with all the outstanding OEM programs. You know, practically all top 10 OEMs in the world are engaged with us on their next generation programs. So we're actually embarking on this path to capture with that momentum moving forward.
Yeah, I'll add a couple of points. You know, just in the last several months, you see you know, Argo being dissolved by Ford and Volkswagen, right? So L4 is being pushed out, no doubt. But L2 plus ADAS is accelerating. And as Jun said, our focus has always been on ADAS. So we've actually seen the large OEMs putting more resources on ADAS and accelerating their program. So we do expect several of the large OEMs to source LiDAR this year. And in terms of our pipeline, that's consistent with, you know, what I said earlier, we primarily focus on the large global top 10 OEMs. And we've seen a pickup in those activities.
Mm. Yeah, please.
Just to clarify, Cruise, but then you have General Motors Super Cruise, mm-hmm. and coming Ultra Cruise. Mm-hmm. Your program one was for Cruise?
Ultra Cruise. So Cruise.
For Super Cruise.
Go ahead. Anyone?
No, please go ahead.
So Cruise is a division of GM that's focused on L4, robotaxi. And Super Cruise is a ADAS feature that GM has currently on 22 vehicle models. Ultra Cruise, which we're on, by the way, Super Cruise does not have LiDAR. Ultra Cruise has LiDAR, and that uses a Cepton LiDAR, and that is going to replace Super Cruise. Does that make sense?
Maybe since we are on the GM deal itself, can you talk about how you're thinking about the land and expand opportunity with the customer? What's your current win in terms of how many vehicle models is it on, and then how are you thinking about sort of similar platforms that you can expand to?
Sure, I'll take that first. So that land expand term definitely is playing out for us. So we actually won the award at the end of 2019. From GM. Not until recently we were able to talk about it. But on paper, we are awarded 9 vehicle models that spans multiple brands, from luxury to mid-level vehicles. Expanding is coming in the next year. Actually, it's already coming. As I mentioned, Super Cruise is currently on 22 vehicle models. And we expect Ultra Cruise to be on at least 22 vehicle models. Initially, our contract with GM, our award with GM, goes from 2023 SOP start of production to the end of 2027. That timeline, the 2027 timeline, has already been extended to several years beyond. So that's the expanding factor.
Okay, got it. Then sort of expanding that discussion a bit, you have one LiDAR per vehicle on the General Motors win. When we talk to the different LiDAR companies, there's obviously a school of thought and saying that instead of having a high-performance front-facing LiDAR, you can deliver somewhat of a similar or better performance with lower resolution LiDAR suite around the vehicle. Maybe talk to sort of one, what are you seeing in terms of interest in putting multiple LiDARs on a vehicle from your OEM customers, and also this sort of different architecture approach in saying, I don't need a high-resolution LiDAR for, as a front-facing LiDAR. I can compensate a lot for the performance by putting surround-view LiDAR around the vehicle at much cheaper prices because they just don't have the same resolution as the front-facing LiDAR requires.
Maybe I'll just approach the answer. You can compliment me on this. From the technical perspective to start with, that in addition to resolution, which is indeed an important factor, the first and foremost performance of LiDAR is actually the range sensitivity. How far can you see? It doesn't matter how fine, how much resolution you have. So you got to be able to see a tire at 150, 200 meters to make it useful. So by just having additional short-range LiDARs or low-resolution LiDARs doesn't really help you in terms of sensitivity. You do need a high-performing LiDAR, which is, what GM deploys for the Ultra Cruise system is high-performing front-facing LiDAR for obstacle and other detections. So on the other hand, the short-range LiDAR, the high-performance LiDAR that we have get to see only the front, get only have a certain field of view. But then when you navigate at a slow speed through a parking lot with surrounding obstacles and cars, then having surround views LiDARs is actually very much desired as well at higher resolution. And indeed, we do see that interest in the short or near-range LiDAR picking up very intensively in the recent years. And we're certainly, if you go to our booth, take a look at our short-range LiDAR Nova, it gives very nice surround view of the vehicle with multiple units implementations there. So the interest is definitely there, and the future will be there. But just like in the past for camera, you need to make one camera successful first, and then, a few years later, you start to have multiple cameras around. Same story will be played out as LiDAR.
And maybe just to follow up there, so currently what are you seeing from automakers in sort of intent to put multiple LiDARs on a vehicle? Is that largely sort of, even with the Nova, for example, what's your discussions like with customers? What's the timeline of maybe even the early adoption that you see for Nova?
Well, the Ultra Cruise deployment was our first LiDAR, or practically any LiDAR company with a design win is going to be this next couple years, this year and next year and so on. That's the initial kickoff. And the success of these LiDAR programs will dictate the timeline for additional implementations of short-range LiDARs. So I certainly cannot describe a very specific timeline, but the first program needs to be successful and in to scale, and then additional things will come in. It's going to be measured in years, not in months.
Yeah, I'd say it's very much application dependent, right? So if the OEM wants to maybe do traffic jam, navigation, or stuff that requires 50 meter type of range, then the short-range LiDAR would absolutely be fine. But we've seen most OEMs want to solve the long-range first, so wanted to solve the highway navigation first, because that's, to them, it's more of a bigger selling point and one that they can actually make some money off of the options. But for OEMs that have already spent several years solving that long-range problem, they are thinking about the surround view. For example, our biggest customer, they are thinking about the next generation iteration of the ADAS program. So now you've got the front. Now they're looking at the sides and the back, especially for applications like trucks.
Okay. I guess where I was going with that is if you now start comparing to Mobileye and their sort of what they've publicly discussed as their choice of architecture for the sensor suite, they have outlined plans of keeping one LiDAR per car being necessary, but the other LiDARs can be substituted by radars, etc., that they're working on, which is to say essentially that most of the surround view can be done by other sensors that might end up being cheaper than a LiDAR. How do you sort of compare to that approach, and does that become sort of a headwind to when you think about adoption of Nova, or can you hit similar cost points or price points with Nova that you can hit with like a camera-based sensor or a radar-based sensor?
I think ultimately the near-range LiDAR will hit the price point of almost camera-like or radar-based sensor, just given the volume, multiple units per vehicle. And once the volume is there, the price range will get very similar. And with the fidelity, it's a three-dimensional sensor after all. There's no calculation needed as you have to do it with camera, and there's no guesswork as you have to do with the radar. LiDAR is actually a direct measurement of the fine obstacles around you. We are certainly the strong believer that near-range LiDAR, as well as the far-range LiDAR, has its place in automotive environmental sensing.
Yeah, I think I'll say you hit the nail on the head where you talk about cost, right, compared to camera. I mean, there are some inherent limitations of camera. For example, it's very hard for cameras to detect curb where it's all gray, but it's very easy for LiDAR.
Difficult for a radar to detect a curb.
Yeah, so in that case, if a short-range LiDAR can be had for, under $100, $50, $60, it may make a lot of sense to integrate that into the vehicle.
Okay, good. Maybe let's dig into the size of the current pipeline that you have, and particularly sort of the number of OEMs or scale of OEMs that you're currently in sort of engaged with. Just a progress report of where those discussions are. Because one of the questions that we get from investors is sort of engagement beyond GM and mm-hmm. what are you seeing there?
Yeah, so we have engagement with all top 10, as we mentioned. But in terms of progress and advancement, we'd say the North America large OEMs are the most advanced in terms of their thinking on ADAS. And timeline-wise will be the first to award programs. Obviously, GM had already awarded several years back, but we do expect North American OEMs to follow suit pretty soon. And after that, we'll see the Japanese OEMs will probably be a year or two behind in terms of awarding LiDAR programs. But all of them have decided, maybe other than Tesla, have decided to use LiDAR in their next platform. Yeah.
Okay. Manufacturing or tier one partnerships, so Kuwaito is the primary sort of partnership you have on that front. What are your plans to sort of divesting or sort of not divesting, right, or diversifying the partnerships beyond Kuwaito?
Well, you're right. Kuwaito is actually the frontline tier one for us, especially for the Japanese customers, for obvious reasons. We are actually not exclusive to Kuwaito. We have engagement to all the notable tier ones out there. But if you look at the automotive supply chain, there's also an interesting observation. You get to, let's say, you have 20, 30 OEMs, the car OEMs out there, and then you look at how many headlamp suppliers to these 20, 30 OEMs, and you start to look at only two or three. There's Kuwaito, ZKW, and maybe a couple more. So you get a fewer number in this tier one suppliers. And you look at how many suppliers of LEDs to these tier ones making the headlamps for the OEMs. There are only two. So it's actually a reversed pyramid that you look at the automotive structure. So there is not too much of a reason to diversify, using your word, of tier ones. If you focus on one and get a hold of this tier one that's very solid and very reputable, that supplies multiple OEMs, you have already a blooming business in that supply chain, even though we're not exclusive to Kuwaito.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll add that a lot of it also depends on the OEM, right? OEM have their favorite tier ones to work with. We have a very good relationship with Kuwaito, but they do not supply to all the OEMs. And there are areas where they're strong, Japan and parts of North America, areas where they're not strong. Because right now the technical discussion is between us and the OEMs directly on the performance of the LiDAR. So, you know, if the OEMs tell us, look, we prefer this tier one, see if you can work with them, we absolutely will be working with them.
Okay. The recent investment from Queto, should we sort of interpret that as more a business partnership, continuing on sort of the relationship that you have already as a tier one and tier two, or is this a tier sort of a more long-term shareholder, potentially sort of even increasing their shareholding of the company over time? Like, what's that sort of, what's the driver for them to make this recent investment, and then is that just a business partnership, just given sort of the macro backdrop?
Well, the first interpretation of this continued investment, you know, very significant quantity, is yet another vote of confidence in Cepton's LiDAR performance, technology, our customer, all of those. It's from a conservative Japanese company that's well over a century old. This is having this vote of confidence speaks volumes for Cepton. And yes, to all of your questions, it's a continued partnership and solidify our position in the LiDAR industry. But at the same time, it's also speaking for Koito that they have been this one-century-old automotive lighting supplier. Now, in the new century, they're looking to expand their horizon and capture, you know, significant market in the higher tech than just the lighting itself. So whether they have intention to increase the future shares, all of those are, let's leave that to the future. But I do believe with this investment that we do have a much brighter future as compared to others.
Yeah, exactly. I think implications for us, obviously we welcome the capital that's necessary for us to continue to execute the program. And also, Koito now is even more invested, right? And in terms of product development, especially for the Japanese market, they'll be more involved. And also the business development for the Japanese market, they'll be more involved. So in addition to capital, we're also gaining, you know, quite a bit of resources and commitment on business.
Okay. And, yeah, go ahead.
Going back to where we are on the cost curve, you're going into commercialization, 23 to 27, program one, luxury, I think goes in like 22 programs at GM. Have you shared with us kind of where we are on the cost curve? You know, where we are today on prototypes, where you will be on, you know, job one with GM, and by the end of that 3 years, what that cost curve would look like?
Yeah, we shared that ASP in the very beginning. It starts off, you know, below $1,000, no question about it, and eventually it will work its way to about 500 in terms of ASP, unit ASP. And for Cepton, we expect gross margin to eventually be somewhere in the low 50s, 50% area. This year, because we're just starting to produce, you know, production volume, 2023 is the start of SOP, we do expect you know, positive gross margin this year, and then with additional cost reduction efforts that it's already underway, we expect that to come down quite a bit to reach our gross margin objectives.
And I'm not familiar with the story, so apologies if this is well known, but your balance sheet cash liquidity gets you to job one with GM, and then you're going to need to raise capital to ramp up greater production, or?
Our balance sheet will definitely be able to allow us to execute the GM program in terms of volume production, which is starting this quarter, and more volume next year, and then 2025.
Maybe just to follow up and just get into the numbers a bit here, cash on the balance sheet, what sort of that ending number versus how much are you right now burning on a per quarter basis in terms of cash? So how does that give you visibility into sort of how many quarters you can run?
Yeah, so we haven't disclosed our fourth quarter, you know, year-end numbers yet. So, but we do expect our year-end balance to be around just shy of $40 million. That's before closing the Koito transaction. And after the transaction, we expect to be somewhere in the 90 plus range.
Okay. and how much are you, how much is the cash outflow for quarter at this point? How much are you trying to sort of contain?
Yeah, so for 2022, our guidance were between the OPEX was between 55 to 65 million a year. And I believe we will be able to meet, we'll end the year within that range. For 2023, we expect similar amount of OPEX. We are pretty disciplined on cost and spending. So if you look at our OPEX compared to some of the other public LiDAR companies, we are significantly below, you know, the industry average.
Yeah. Okay. Let's quickly move to maybe just grab with a couple of questions on smart infrastructure. That's one area that I think you've highlighted that the macro is having an impact on the business. So firstly, maybe just for the audience, like, where do you participate in smart infrastructure more, and what are you seeing as a result of the macro in terms of business activity?
We've always said the smart infrastructure market is a very fragmented market, right? And a lot of it is application dependent. So where we are seeing some maturity in terms of application is the rail tolling application and some airport application for security and people tracking. We see those two as becoming mature, and we expect to be able to announce a multi-million-dollar smart infrastructure win very soon.
Okay. And sort of looking at the areas that you're sort of looking at in smart infrastructure, do you see other adjacent areas to sort of delve into and drive those opportunities? How are you thinking about? Because it's a broad market. So, which are the parts of the market that you really want to focus on?
Yeah, I'd say first of all, our primary focus is obviously on automotive. So 80 plus percent of our resources are spent on automotive. But the interesting applications for smart infra, for example, industrial applications that actually use the NOVA sensor, the near range sensor, we've seen a lot of interest in that. Those include, warehouse automation, outside landscaping, like autonomous machines like mowing the lawn, those kind of applications. Yeah, we've seen a pickup in those.
Okay, got it. One thing that I wanted to sort of switch back to on the automotive side is software and the hardware stack, but then how you're thinking about the software stack and what are the portions of the software stack that you're investing in and what are the portions of the software stack that you think the OEMs are interested in sort of contribution from the tier two and tier one suppliers versus sort of developing in-house?
Yeah, I'll get started first on that. We started as a hardware LiDAR company, but really the ultimate goal for Cepton is actually becoming a perception company that covers all aspects of how to sense the environment for automobiles. For us, we have spent quite a bit of resources starting a couple of years ago to ramp up our software effort based on our LiDAR platform, and now we actually have a bigger software team than hardware team, even though people consider us as a LiDAR hardware company. And the relationship between us and the OEMs is always a collaborative effort because, the software for perception is... it's not that, you hand me a piece of hardware and I'll take care of the rest. It's always, which part goes to where is the most efficient that consumes the least power. And this is actually a collaborative effort that's also very much dependent on the OEM. So whether it's actually a European OEM or a North American OEM or Japanese OEM, they have different capabilities, different preferences. And Cepton, being as small as we are, or as agile as we are, we're actually very adaptable working with all the OEMs. But we do take on a big part in the software effort for perception.
Yeah, I want to make a quick distinction in software in that there's perception software and there's automotive software. And so automotive software is essentially, embedded software. Some call it firmware, right? So firmware we do, or the tier one does typically. But in our case, we do the firmware for our sensors. perception software depends on OEM. Large OEMs like GM and some others would like to keep that capability in-house for them to be able to differentiate. Some smaller OEMs may outsource that to a supplier. So we already have perception software for the smart infrastructure business. We have already started working on that for the automotive side of the application. But as soon as an OEM says to us, okay, we would like automotive perception software from you guys, it'll be ready.
Great. We run out of time, but thank you for coming to the conference, and thank you to the audience as well.
Right. Thank you, Samik.
Thank you.